What you're looking at here is my X account. In the last 12 months, I've gotten 171 million impressions, almost 900,000 bookmarks, 100,000 shares. It's driven millions of dollars a year to my businesses, and it's also been a lot of fun. In this episode, I brought on Jay Ice Cream, Jonathan Courtney, where we talk about a framework that I use and how to build an audience just like this. I've never shared this document before. It's how to build an audience in 2025, the four-step playbook. I know you'll enjoy this episode. I can't wait for you to go through this with me. And Jonathan asked some great questions and give some good feedback. I love this episode. It was super fun. It sounds basic, how to build an audience in 2025, but this is actually the sauce for how to do it. It took me 15 years to come up with this playbook. I'm sharing it with you for free. I hope it's super valuable and enjoy the episode. The Startup Ideas Podcast. Sipping time, baby. I have a document of how to build an audience in 2025 and how I would do it. And it's a four-step playbook. Should we go through it?
Hell yes. And also maybe link it in the, it's going to be linked in the description.
Linked in the show notes. Okay, so how to build an audience in 2025, and just pipe in with questions as you come pipe in, because I'm a plumber now.
You're a plumber.
Yeah, right.
You're really in the whole plumbing thing's taking over your life.
Totally. So I have this framework. I've bet my entire career on this framework. I built all my businesses around this. It's called the ACP framework. So audience, A stands for audience, people in your niche who are passionate about the topic and underserved in some way. Community, a C for community, which is your hardcore people. And P, product, it's what you sell to those people. So I just wanted to like preface it that if you're going to build an audience, think of it as ACP, like start with the audience, then build the community, and then build the product.
I just want to double down and say, I wish you could. Can you just like post this every single day on your X account? Because the product first approach works for some people, but the audience first approach gives you so many options, also gives you so much confidence when you release something and people actually use it. Like, there's nothing more soul destroying than launching something and zero people are using it. And I understand. That's also the thing that people will say in the comments. Like, if you're a crazy, super funded startup with millions and millions and millions of dollars to spend, okay, maybe you can start with the product because you've years to burn and like you can figure out marketing later or whatever. But for a bootstrap business, starting with the audience just is the most, like, you just, that's what you have to do. It doesn't make sense to do it the other way around.
Exactly. Like,
dig the well before you need the water, whatever. That's some saying I heard.
Totally. Yeah. I should add that to the document. Dig the water.
Dig the water. What is it? Fuck. It's dig the well before you need the water or something. Dig the well before you need it. Water the well before you dig the people. I can't remember. Piss in the well.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so now that you understand the ACP framework, you're going to want to start with identifying basically who you're creating for. So the way I think about it is, like for me, I'm focusing on like people interested in startup ideas and building their startup ideas using the ACP framework. So I basically exclusively post and consume content from people who are in my ACP startup ideas world. So that's identify who you're creating for. Then, really important, understand what they're not getting from others. So what can you do to stand out? Not enough people, it sounds so simple, but not enough people actually take stock as to like what other creators are creating and then how you can be different. And then
can you elaborate on that for 1 second? So understand what they're not getting from others. Can you tell me what you recognized that your audience was not getting from others that you were able to give?
Sauce.
sauce. So for you, sauce is like not holding anything back. Just here's exactly everything. You know, execution's one of the hard parts anyway. So ideas, you're just giving them for free. You're not holding anything back. Is that what you mean by sauce? Or do you mean like ketchup?
I'll just give you an example. I tweeted about how I think that there's this opportunity to basically for vibe coders to band together and to build free versions of very popular legacy SaaS companies like DocuSign, like Figma, like all the Adobe stack. And I give a playbook for how I would do it. Now, this is something that I'm actively interested in. So I'm giving away the sauce, but it's not like I'm giving away the sauce because I'm like, well, here's an idea. No one's going to execute on this. Like some people, a percent, maybe it's a tenth of a percent, but a tenth of that percent is going to go and execute against this and potentially compete with me on it. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it. So there are downsides. There are downsides potentially of giving away the sauce. But yeah, my point is the larger point here is, you want to stand out and it's really competitive now. So just try to create, and the way to stand out might be by, making, sharing a lot of videos, sharing a lot of images, giving away sauce, writing long stories, figuring out what the format is, which is something we'll talk about next.
I'm satisfied with that answer.
Quick break in the pod to tell you a little bit about Startup Empire. So Startup Empire is my private membership where it's a bunch of people like me, like you, who want to build out their startup ideas. Now they're looking for content to help accelerate that. They're looking for potential co-founders. They're looking for tutorials from people like me to come in and tell them, how do you do email marketing? How do you build an audience? How do you go viral on Twitter? All these different things. That's exactly what Startup Empire is. And it's for people who want to start a startup but are looking for ideas, or it's for people who have a startup but just they're not seeing the traction that they need. So you can check out the link to startupempire.co in the description. Cool. And then I just have here, note, if you aren't getting engagement, start one level broader than your niche. You need engagement for reach before you can specialize sometimes. So sometimes people, they'll start like an X account, for example, and they'll be like, but I'm not getting any engagement. Well, it's because, you might have picked such a small niche that you're just not getting fed to the app for the For You page. So sometimes you have to be a little more broad and then you can go a bit more specialized.
I want to squirt in an exact example from my company here. We wanted to get known for being, back in the day, we wanted people to know us about, like, we're doing design sprints. Basically, we wanted people to look to us for that topic. Back in 2016, it wasn't an interesting topic on the internet. So we kept trying and trying and trying, and no one would watch our YouTube videos. Eventually, we kind of drew this, I sat down with my team and I drew this funnel. And like at the bottom of it, I was like, we want people to get to design sprints here. But like, what are the things that are more interesting to people? Okay, looks like design thinking is more popular than that, but it's still not very popular. What's like the thing above that? And at the time, we just said it's UX design. Like UX design is like the super broad, super popular topic that we can funnel them down to the more specific thing later. And so we started making UX videos on YouTube. And the annoying thing is those UX videos on YouTube are still our most popular videos. Like one of our most popular videos ever is a Figma tutorial, even though that's nothing to do with what we do at our company, just because we needed to go so broad to bring them back to what we wanted to. So that was a situation where we were hitting a wall with a topic that just was too niche at the time. And so we had to broaden to UX, which was broader. Is that sort of what you mean by
exactly.
that?
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. That's actually pretty important.
Yeah, it's really important. And the other thing that's really important that no one talks about having building an audience is just formats. Like building, that's step two in the four-step playbook. You have to figure out what your format is. So what is a format? First and foremost, so let's define what that means. A format could be something like how Naval does these like one-line banger tweets that are like very philosophical, right? It, you know, he'll say these philosophical tweets, one line. He's not doing like long videos or long form tweets or something like that. He's being very concise, he's being very clear, and he's being very catchy. And that's him. Now, someone like me on my X, what you'll notice is I do a lot of like long form. Like I write really, really long stuff. But that's because I want to give the sauce, and I can't give the sauce in one line, realistically. So what you need to do if you're trying to build an audience is to pick one format for each business day. And the goal here is you're basically going to land eventually on one format that's going to crush it for you. That's the goal. But sometimes it takes, it's kind of like startup buildings. You know, sometimes you have to try a bunch of different things in your startup to see what's going to work. And then you double down on the thing that works. So the way to come up with your format is to look for formats outside your niche. Copying what's saturated in your space makes it harder to stand out, right? If you're just going to try to compete with Naval and try to do one-line bangers, you're going to lose, realistically. You have zero followers and he's got millions of followers. So the way to compete with Naval is actually not to copy with what Naval does, but look for formats outside of what that Naval niche is and see if you can apply that to your niche. So for example, maybe a format might be like philosophical memes, something like that. And then the last thing before, I'm curious your thoughts. The last thing here is you want to consider, actually there's a few more things.
You're like, you just scrolled and realized you made way more things.
Let me finish formats and then I'd like to get your opinion on it. So you want to consider what's working platform wide. So for example, short form video in 2025 is working. Therefore, it might make sense. If Naval was starting in 2025, maybe he would do short form video. Because the algorithms are favoring short form video. So consider what's working. You got to be silly not to consider what's working. Focus on what feels natural and enjoyable to make sure you stay consistent. I stayed consistent over almost 20 years of creating content in X because I found what was fun for me to do. If you don't like creating video content, chances are you're going to churn. You're going to stop creating video content. So focus on what feels natural and enjoyable to stay consistent. And then test for 90 days and let the data tell you what's working. If you're going to build an audience, let's say on X, you have analytics there. If you're going to build on YouTube, they've even got even better analytics there. All these platforms have analytics, and you're silly if you don't look at the analytics and see what's working and let the data tell you. And then the last thing on format is remember that formats have life cycles. So what I mean by that is a format might be really popular and then it kind of like dies down and then people start ignoring it. So you always have to constantly reinvent yourself. Now that a life cycle used to have 2 years. Now it's like, sometimes it's almost like 2 weeks. But just be aware that formats have life cycles. So you always need to be looking at what other people are doing just so you have fresh insight into formats.
This is really great. I have a couple of questions for what I'm imagining some people in your audience are going to be wondering. Maybe I'll start with a statement. Looking at this, it really reminds me, I recently listened to an episode of Tim Ferriss's podcast. No one should listen to that. You should just listen to this podcast. But I was just, you know, doing some research for your podcast, Greg. I would never listen to anybody else's podcast. Seth Godin was on there and he said, he had this great statement, which was, you know, he'll sometimes talk to people who are just like, they've just finished a book or they've just finished making a product or they have the idea and they've got everything ready. And then they're just, and then they're like, oh yeah, now I just have to market it. Like everything's done. Now I just have to market it. And he said something along the lines of, no, that means you just started, because that's actually the hard part. Getting people to actually pay attention to what you're doing is so much harder than often just doing the thing and making the thing, because often that's like something you're passionate about. So for me, I think a lot of people listening to your podcast might not understand the seriousness of what you're saying here, which is ACP is in order. The A is first, the audience is first, from what I understand from this. That's also your kind of thesis, that the goal here is to start digging the well, to start bringing together your people. So when you do have something to share with them, when you do have something you maybe want to sell or whatever it is, they are there for you versus trying to claw that together when you have a product. And it also takes a long time. So it's not something that happens overnight. Building an audience is like, I don't know, doing index funds. It builds, the dividends build and compound over the years. And so, yeah, I think one thing that I'd love to hear from you is like, what would you say to the people, which there will be in the comments, who say, oh, if you build it, they will come. Like Apple, you know, you just build a great product and people will use it. Like, what do you say to those types of people? I'm not saying they're wrong. Of course, there are edge cases where this happens. But what do you think about that? Like, if you were investing in a company and I was the CEO and I was like, we're going to work on the product for 2 years. By the way, you're our investor. You have to pay us. And in that time, you know, we'll just release the product and everyone will want to use it. So,
okay. Well, first of all, we have to agree that if you build a product, you need to sell that product. And if you sell that product, you need attention. And there's two ways to get attention. Either you get it organically or not organically. Another way to say that is free or paid. So if you're starting a startup, especially if you're bootstrapping it, of course, it's better to not pay for it than pay for it. And it's better for a few reasons. The first reason is by going through this four-step playbook, you're going to be at one with your audience and community. And that's going to allow you to make a way better product with a better moat and a more indispensable business if you go through this, versus you just cheat, so to speak. You rent the audience, you pay for it. If you go through this four-step playbook, you'll be able to be able to create better ads in the future, right? I'm not saying don't do ads. I'm just saying that the best ads start by being organic first. And then, like, you know, some of these formats you can just use and promote. And for example, like, I'm sure I can write a saucy startup idea, you know, post and promote it via ads too, and it would work as well. I just don't do that because I don't particularly have a product I'm selling, but I could, you know? And I think that's the best way to think about it.
And with the free versus paid, it's not just like, but would you view it as like if someone was starting a business, a bootstrap business, or even an agency or a small business, would you say it's not even an option? Like, you actually have to do this? Like, if you're not planning on running ads, so you're not planning on doing paid, you kind of have to do this, or else you just, everything has to be just your small word of mouth network.
I find it very difficult to make the case in 2025 to not be on social and not be going through this playbook. I really don't understand why you wouldn't, because this is your unfair advantage. This is literally your unfair advantage.
Absolutely.
I'm going to continue. Yeah. I want to go to systems, because the reason I included systems, by the way, is because some people would, you know, if I just did audience and formats, like, you know, you, you, you might just stop doing it, basically. And I want you to have systems so that you actually do the ACP funnel and you actually go and build an audience. So let's start from the top. So build your creative faucet routine. So find what gets your creative juices flowing. So this could be starting a fresh account, following 50 people in your niche. And, you know, it might be that, but it also might be what might get your creative juices flowing might be like going to in-person events. It might be going for walks and listening to podcasts. Like, I don't know what it is, but figure out what your creative faucet, what turns on your creativity, build that routine, and then have an ideas capture system. So I use just Apple Notes, literally, where I write out some idea that comes to me while the creative faucet is going. And that might be when I'm on a walk and I might just like write down like this one idea for a potential tweet or a video idea or a newsletter for Greg's letter, my newsletter. But have an ideas capture system. Why I use Notes and not like a fancy notes app is because it's everywhere, it's simple, and I'm just trying to make it simple. Set weekly time to turn your ideas into products, content. So what I mean by that is I think of my tweets, you know, podcasts, newsletters, almost as products. Like that I think of them almost like minimal viable products. So, you know, every Friday, for example, sometimes I'll go and, or actually not sometimes, on Fridays, what I do is I turn my ideas, and some of them are bad, some of them are good, but I turn them into long form tweets, maybe newsletters. I don't work with postbridge.com, but you could use a scheduling tool like Postbridge, or another scheduling tool, so that you just like don't have to think about it and it's scheduled. And then the last thing is for the systems piece is be strategic with timing. So match platform timing to audience behavior and mindset. So what I mean by that is you probably shouldn't post on LinkedIn at 3 a.m. on Saturday night. You know what I mean?
Yourself, man.
Yeah. So post when topics are relevant. So like the why now matters. If you're going to go post about DeepSeek in
next
March
week.
10th, like it's too late, bro. You know, like that worked a month ago. It's not going to work as much now. Look for opportunities to join trending conversations. So this is newsjacking. How can you jack the news?
Jacking.
Yeah.
That's something I do, but I think it's kind of different to what you're talking about there.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too, but can you talk more about that?
The news? I thought I was the only one.
Talk more about your newsjacking behavior.
I thought I was the only one who newsjacked.
Okay, well maybe we can move on from that. Put out content when it has the highest likelihood of success. That's the way to think about it. This is the systems you need so that you can actually put stuff out in the ether and do it with some level of consistency.
Love that. And this is amazing. Yeah. I love how I just came with a random topic and you're like, oh, I've already made an entire Google Doc full of stuff for this.
And I haven't posted this publicly, by the way.
Oh, great. So it's secret. Yeah.
It's a secret.
Only in this episode.
This is something I did an AMA in Startup Empire and I just started writing this out, but I haven't posted this publicly. Not because I've been gatekeeping or anything, just because I was going to post this publicly, basically.
I think you've been gatekeeping it, to be honest. He's gatekeeping it, guys.
Yeah, I've been gatekeeping. No, I think it's important to, like, I have like a bunch of things like this where it's like, if I'm not feeling creative for whatever reason, this is like evergreen content that like how to build an audience, like it's evergreen and I can always just post it.
Everyone always needs this information.
Literally. Last thing on the 4-step playbook, pick one primary goal. Now, for example, What are you trying to do? Are you trying to get to 100,000 followers in 12 months? Are you trying to get to a 25,000 email list? Are you trying to sell $1 million through social? Just pick one thing. A lot of people here pick like multiple things. No, just pick one thing and then measure the effectiveness of your formats against this goal. And you can do that on a every 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. I think 90 days is good enough. But just make sure you're tracking or else you're going to get a bit lost. And then just remember that attention is scarce. Build it as an asset. Treat your content like a product. Approach it with the same rigor you'd bring to a job. You know, you might look at a Naval tweet and be like, he just came up with this on the toilet. But I bet you he didn't. I bet you he used a system like this to actually...
Two toilets.
Yeah, maybe multiple toilets. He might have been on...
Yeah, he was newsjacking on two different toilets. He's never going to come on this podcast now.
Classic Naval. Classic Naval. Optimize for your goal, not vanity metrics.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people want to get to followers, for example. But I think what's more interesting is like for even for this podcast, like one of my metrics is comments and like positive comments. So I care less about subscribers and more about positive comments.
More the ones where people say we look like brothers.
Yeah, that's my number one metric. The one that says that we look like...
A brotherly comment.
Yeah, the positive brotherly comments.
I wish you weren't trying to get people to listen to this podcast so you could just name it stupid shit like this. Because that would be the name of this episode, Positive Brotherly Comments.
Yeah, that'd be so good.
Newsjacking edition.
Yeah. just start. Don't get stuck on analysis paralysis. Be patient. Growth takes time. I started on Twitter almost 20 years ago. It took me until 2020 to get to 10,000 followers, and I only really skyrocketed in 2020. But it's because it took me 15 years basically to come up with this format, and it took me 5 years to execute against it. And I can't think of anything more valuable than this document. Like if you just
I
do
think
this,
it's amazing.
Yeah. If you just do this document, like you will win. And
okay.
You
I
want to
help
a,
your.
Yeah. I was going to say like you can have this, you can have a full-time job and do this on the side. You can go, if you want to go build a startup, you can make this a part of your routine. Like it doesn't matter who you are, but I just can't think of anything more important than this.
It's really amazing. And I think it's definitely something that would be cool if you're sharing it in the description here, because it's super helpful. What is like so someone is like right now listening to us talk and they're a little bit like, oh my God, like this is so cool, but I'm slightly overwhelmed. If you were just to give someone one tactic or strategy to do on repeat, let's say they choose a platform, let's say they choose X or they choose LinkedIn, whatever. And their goal is to just grow their audience so that they can grow their newsletter, so that they can sell things, whatever. What would be the thing you'd say every day, just do this thing to get to the first, you know, to start getting momentum? Would you say it is the replying tactic for like to get this? I think sometimes people need a sense of momentum and confidence that there's actually a point to do this thing so that they get like this dopamine hit from it working. And I'm wondering, what would you say is like the perfect way to start something like this that doesn't feel overwhelming?
I think X is the best place to start, because no matter what you're building, because it'll allow you just to experiment basically with formats. And X is the best place to be a reply guy, basically.
Yes.
So I would say, if you need a little confidence boost and you need a little dopamine, starting as your MVP as a reply is probably what you should do.
For like 90 days to see if it's working, and then tweak at 90 days.
Well, you'll also be able to, you're kind of like experimenting with formats through replies. So it's going to give you ideas on which formats to create through the replies. It's also a way less daunting to reply than to post on your own profile. And that's because when you post on your own profile, it's like Jonathan Courtney is posting this. Although you'll
say
anything.
This is my opinion. This is my, like, I'm telling the world this thing.
You're not scared of that, you know? for better or for worse.
I'm not scared.
I think a lot of people do, and I understand why they do. They feel sometimes that they're being judged by the content, and that's another reason why I think X is a better place than, for example, Instagram, posting on your personal Instagram, where people who, you know, see you as this particular person, all of a sudden you're talking about this like niche topic, business oriented topic, they're going to be like, I didn't follow you for your takes on AI, for mm-hmm. you know, I followed you because you have great abs.
That's why people follow me on Instagram.
That's true.
I don't know how much time we have left, but I have a couple of like things related to the why of growing an audience. Why I think, like, do you have like 15 minutes left or is it done or
where just are we keep at? Going?
All right. Well, I think that the end result, I have a couple of different ways of looking at this, because the beauty of this conversation between Greg and I is that Greg is currently putting tons of love and effort into building an audience and it's working like crazy. And I'm lazy on the other side. I, like, 6 years ago, I started building an audience. I started building our YouTube channel, our Instagram, LinkedIn, all of this kind of stuff. And then I sort of just got a little tired of it. And I turned down the amount of effort I was putting in. And the crazy thing about it is that the dividends that it still pays today to just have done that 6 years ago is unbelievable. Like, it's you're building some sort of like a crazy resource, or like a, what would you even call it? Like
asset.
It's an asset, or it is like this. Well, it's, you're building something that you can keep taking from and keep getting benefit from, even if you eventually lose, let's say, your mojo for it. So it's not one of those things that you have to, like, it's not like this treadmill that you have to be obsessed with now for the next 80 years. I really pushed hard for about 4 years, and the results of this I'm still benefiting from today. And just an example of that, like, I'm bringing it back to the beginning of the podcast, this like product or whatever it is that I had a thought about this morning. The cool thing about having an audience, the cool thing about, you know, moving maybe some of those audience to an email list eventually, or having them on LinkedIn or whatever, is that when the time comes, and maybe some of you guys saw this in our circles over the last few weeks, we were doing a big promotion for this ClickBook. You and I were talking about it. That's when I then decided to switch on my social media, like, and ask for something for the first time in a long time. And the results of this are crazy. And this is something that just doesn't work if you don't have an audience. There's like nothing can come with it. An audience is so unbelievably valuable. And also, like, Greg, your audience size is also extremely valuable to other people. Like, if you ever wanted to just say, you know what, I'm just going to do sponsors. Like, I don't want to run my businesses anymore. It's too stressful. You could make crap tons of money just having your podcast or doing sponsored posts or whatever it is. Not saying that's your business thing, but it gives you crap tons of options. And I almost look at it, it's like, if you build the system that Greg is talking about, we're not trying to sell you anything here, by the way. It's just like, if you do the thing Greg talks about, you almost get like this ability to switch on revenue if you have an idea for a product. And I love that. I love the idea of just being like, well, in 3 years' time, if this company is not doing well, or if I don't like this job, then all I have to do to generate revenue is come up with an idea that this audience will enjoy, or this audience will find valuable, or this audience hasn't had yet. And that makes life and business feel much less tense and also much more predictable. It's so much more predictable. Like, you know, we were talking again before this podcast, and we just know, like, when we're looking at something like that, it's like, oh yeah, that would make this much money. If you have no audience, if we had no audience, it would just be like, this is a cool idea, but like, how the hell will we find anybody to, you know what I mean? It's a completely different world you live in when you have an audience versus when you have no audience at all. And you know, even the companies where you think, oh, these guys don't do any social media and they still are successful. Like, I don't know, maybe you look at a company like Basecamp and you're like, oh, they stay away from all that stuff. Jason Fried and his co-founder wrote books that literally were New York Times bestsellers as a way to bring attention to their companies. Like, every person who makes things that are interesting uses a lot of, or does marketing, either organic or paid. And I think organic marketing is just one of these insanely powerful tools for you just getting more options for your life and your business, so that you're also not stuck to having to do one thing. Like, if there was a crazy recession tomorrow, Greg, and let's say all your companies just failed and all went bankrupt, if you had no audience at all and you hadn't been doing this, I guess you'd be a lot more worried than you would be if that actually happened today. I think you'd be like, that really sucks. But also, I also wanted to make this thing for a while, so let's see if my audience likes that.
I mean, I think the number one reason why anyone should create an audience is to have something to fall back on. Period.
Yes. It's like, insurance. That's the word I was looking for. It's like an insurance. Yeah.
It's an insurance policy. So it's like, okay, I'm going to dedicate 4 hours of time per week to this. And what do I get out of it? Well, for one, I get clarity into this niche I care about, which, by the way, that itself is huge. Like, clarity in the sense of like, okay, I understand what these people want, why they want it, their motivations, their incentives, that whole thing. Two is, whenever I need something from this group of people, at some point in the future, I could tap into it, just as if you tap into, you know, your retirement account. This is your retirement account, right? If you need to build a business, build a startup, you can tap into these people as potential customers, beta users, that sort of thing. If you want a job, all of a sudden you have all these people who are in your niche that have built in trust that you can message and be like, hey, it's a recession right now, but you've been following me for the last 4 years. You know I'm really competent at XYZ. Can you hire me? And I guarantee you that's going to work better than randomly applying on a LinkedIn post.
It's so, so goddamn true. It's a feeling. It's like a feeling of something to fall back on, a feeling of a bit of safety.
Yeah.
Also financially. I mean, like, it sounds ridiculous to even be sharing this, but I'm going on a trip to Japan soon and it's going to be very expensive. And I was kind of like, there was something I wanted to book, but it was very expensive, right? You actually recommended it to me. And I was like, this is really excessive. But then I was like, but all I have to do is just have another idea for this to not, like, to bump, give the business a really big bump so that it doesn't feel as silly to do this. And that also is something I'm just so grateful for, that I can just be like, oh, let's just do this thing because this is something our audience would appreciate. This is something that people who follow me would find valuable. And also it then mentally for me offsets some of the, what I perceive to be too much lavish spending, but it's something I want to do. And so I think this is very difficult to do if you don't have an audience to present stuff to. And I'm not saying every single thing you'll present to them will work, but the fact that you can be like, I'm interested in having this life experience and doing this thing, and I, to do this, would like to have an increase of this much money. And then you can just go, okay, I'm going to turn it on then. I'm just going to switch that on because I have the energy, because I have the creativity right now. Having an audience allows you to also use your creativity, because you're not then trying to figure out how will I get people to actually see this. So you can focus on making something interesting focus on making the coolest thing and then know that you can just sell it. It's really, I guess people are going to be like, yeah, I can imagine the first comment here is, we get it, build an audience.
Yeah.
We're like trying to really selling the idea, but it's just so, it's so important.
Yeah. What are you doing? Like, why are you listening to this podcast even at this point? It's like, now, you know, just do it. It's like, why not? Why wouldn't you do it?
You're looking at Greg and he has, you know, crazy, crazy audience. Guys, I have been very lazy on the social media front. And I want to give you an example. I started a blog two years ago because I was
okay,
like,
okay, old man.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, Substack.
What's that?
Yeah. Exactly.
That
so I started.
What is that?
Hello, children. Would you like to see my blog? I started a blog and a podcast, which wasn't even on any sort of schedule. It's unscheduled. And I half-assed ran that now for the last 2 or 3 years. And it has a very small audience, very, very tiny. But whenever I tap into it, the first time I tapped into it was like a year and a half after I launched it. And I really, it's like the, after 1 year, there was like 2,000 people reading it or something. It's very tiny. But even with that audience, because my niche in that case was business owners who were making more than $1 million already, I was able to run an event that brought in like $70,000 from that tiny, tiny amount of people who were reading my blog. So it doesn't have to be that you become as successful or as prolific as Greg. I think that would be a great target to have because, you know, if you aim this far, then you can only fall this far, whatever. Definitely
aim for
don't
the stars
aim
and then you land the on the moon.
Exactly. Definitely don't aim for the moon because guys, my laziness level is just because I am like kind of whatever. I built my businesses already and I'm being way, and I'm European. Whereas
yeah,
I wish I had Greg's like enthusiasm and energy, but I want you guys to know that, you know, I post on LinkedIn maybe 2 times per week. I write my blog maybe once a month. I post on X maybe once a week. And that's way less useful and successful than the way Greg does it, but it's still better than nothing. It still has an outcome. And I think the barrier to entry to building an audience, people are often like embarrassed about just not having anything to say, not having anything to give, because they're like, oh, there's already 1 billion people out there talking about the same thing. Well, just start the way that Greg talked about. Start replying to people. You'll find your angle. You'll find your voice. You'll find your format. And then you'll find your specific way of talking and figuring things out. Last thing, just because other people are talking about a topic that you are interested in, let's say facilitation is one of the topics I talk about. Well, the other people talking about facilitation don't look like me, they don't sound like me, and they don't act like me. So even though I'm often saying the exact same stuff because we're all pulling from the same pool of information around facilitation, some people want to listen to me specifically talk about it because of the way I talk about things. And some people are very repelled from the way I talk, and so they want to listen to the other people. So I think that's another thing. People think that there's no point in jumping into talking about startups, Greg. Like, there's plenty of people talking about what you talk about, but you talk about it in your specific way, even down to like with your vibe, with your energy, with who the amazing people you choose to bring into your inner circle and on your podcast, like Jay Ice Cream. Your angle, like your own personality, will make what you do different just automatically by who you are. So there's a quote in this book from Derek Sivers, Hell Yeah or No. And he said, like, stop trying to be original. Sometimes just doing like bands that are successful often started out as cover bands. And the more covers that they played, the more it became their own thing. And it's like, he said, it's like an imperfect mirror. So even if you try to copy someone, you're going to do that in an imperfect way that makes your version special.
Ooh, I love that.
It's fascinating. Yeah. I think even the most successful products out there, you know Fortnite, the video game, the most successful video game of all time.
What's that? What's Fortnite?
Okay, you're joking. But this is essentially a clone of a game called PUBG. And when it first came out, I remember being like, oh my God, that is so like embarrassing, like how much of a clone that is. Even the fact that they fly in and get dropped down. And then it just became, it's the same general idea now, but has its own vibe, its own thing. It became something completely different. And then there was another game that came out, which is like it's called Apex Legends, which is a clone of Fortnite, which also became successful and became its own thing and had its own, it was like a clone of Fortnite and Overwatch a little bit. And so with your content, originality is not the goal in the beginning. You're going to accidentally become original by just being yourself and having your own life experiences. Drop the mic. That's the point I was trying to make for the last 10 minutes.
Boom. Okay. That was amazing. I'm fired up. Before we end on that video game note and on your X account note, you tweeted, this is your tweet, which by the way, there was one like to the tweet. I was the only person who liked it.
This is a perfect example. I got one like. That's, guys, all of you procrastinating on not posting, I got one like. And I'm fine with that. What was it?
No, never played a Monster Hunter before, but I'm loving Wilds. The loop is so simple and satisfying. So I'm guessing Monster Hunter is a video game.
Yeah, and I don't know why the no is there. That's not supposed to be there. That's a mistake.
Yeah,
that's supposed so this to is, be.
This,
yeah.
This is an example of what not to do. Start the J Ice Cream format is just start.
Do not copy my X account. It's so bad.
Yeah, oh just start it with a no. Okay, so my question to you is, what is Monster Hunter a good game? Should people play it?
I'm really enjoying Monster Hunter Wilds. I'm playing it on PS5. And if any of you guys want to play it with me, because it's an online game, please put your Monster Hunter code in the comments of this video and I will connect with you. I'm desperate. None of my friends play video games. It's so annoying. Everyone's so serious. Everyone's like doing like real stuff. And I'm like, I also still want to play video games. So Monster Hunter Wilds, I've never played a Monster Hunter video game before. Super satisfying loop. By the way, relating to content, a lot of my content on my more successful channels, not X, is inspired by video games as well. So I'll often be playing a video game and I'll take an angle from it and turn it into an article or a video. So that's like something where one of my hobbies really influences the content that I create, and that makes it different. I talk about video games a lot, you know?
Cool. I love it. This has been great. Jay Ice Cream, Jonathan Ice Cream, Jonathan Courtney, Jay Ice Cream. You call him what he is, what he isn't. He's the best. We're honored to have you. And this has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me on. Thanks to the audience for always being so kind in the comments. Much appreciated. And please download that thing.
Are you priming the audience to be kind?
Because you don't want positive comments. And I would also appreciate positive comments about my hair. I should have said this earlier because people, I guess, on YouTube don't always listen until the very end. But I would like some positive comments about my hair and also about my biceps.
Okay. Maybe we'll do a little poll. Who is better looking?
Oh, no, do that, dude. I'll get fucking ruined.
I'll get destroyed. No. We're equal. We're basically the same looking. We're the same guy.
I think you're like you look more vital. I look more used up than you somehow. I look like the tired version of you.
You look like Jay Ice Cream looks like if Greg Eisenberg went to a prison in Berlin for like 3 months.
Wait, are we the same age? Or you don't want to say your age? I don't know.
I'll say my age. How old are you?
I'm turning 37 next week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. I'm 36.
Okay, so there's actually no excuse for me to look this tired. Shit, I was hoping you'd say 30, and then I'm like, I don't know, that makes sense.
For real? Actually, a question. Do you have a nighttime skin routine?
I'm lazy with it. I do put on a moisturizer, but the answer is no. I put a moisturizer on like every so often, and then I don't wash it off until I have a shower. So the answer is no.
Okay.
Do you?
When I was 30 years old, a friend of mine who I think at the time was 42 or something, his gift to me was the nighttime moisturizer, basically. And he told me, he was like, the reason I'm 42, but I look 28 is because I've been using this since, I mean, this is crazy. He had been using it since he was 17.
What is it? Like, what's the brand of it? Like, is it like retinol and other stuff?
He was using Kiehl's. So he gave me Kiehl's. I don't use Kiehl's. Now I use like a fancy one.
What is it? I want to know. I want to know how to look juicy.
It's called, I think I heard Tim Ferriss, Kevin Rose, people like that use this cream. This night
oh,
cream.
Oh shit, dude. I have to go. I'm really sorry. Okay.
So on the next episode, we will talk about our nighttime routine and what creams we use.
All right, sorry, all right. Dude. I didn't realize I have a call right now.
Later.
Love you. Bye. 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 Bye.